Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Marca Mesut Özil. Buena llegada de Alexis, de nuevo el centro atrás para el segundo. Ha marcado y es justo Iwobi. El 2-0 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunner Blog. Goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning. It is a goodly morning. Sunday, Lord's Day.
Have you been to church?
I definitely haven't, no.
Oh.
But I like that we're recording on a Sunday, though. It's exciting. It's like we're trying to spice up a failing marriage by mixing it up. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Are you suggesting, you know, we get somebody else in to record with
Maybe.
Us?
Maybe. We could do a three-way. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, technically, it'd be a nightmare, but beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of thrown me off loop here now. I wasn't expecting
that. What a start. No, it's my fault. I can't record on Monday morning, so we've had to change it.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm enjoying it.
So far, so good, I have to say.
Yeah.
I'm also doing something a little bit different at this end because I've had a few technical issues with regards to the sound. There's this weird sort of crackling, buzzing sound that appears when we talk, just momentarily, but it's happening quite frequently. So I've been trying to track down what the problem is. I've got to say thanks to Stuart Ballingall, who's been giving me lots of advice and things to try. Now, so far, none of the things that he's given me advice on have worked. Not a single one, but I'm going through like a really long process of elimination. I'm trying new plug sockets. I'm trying new cables. I'm trying new equipment. I'm trying new all kinds of things. So I'm trying something different today on this particular one, just in terms of how I'm recording it. So if that makes a difference, or if you don't hear the crackling, buzzing sound, do let me know. Or if you do hear it, and I don't hear it when I'm doing a little bit of listen back to this, let me know. So I'm talking to listeners, not you, because
wouldn't it be great if this week of all weeks, as a belated April Fool, I revealed that I'm just sat here with a massive box of Rice Krispies, just crunching them and holding them near the microphone.
It would be quite an elaborate plan, and it would have worked extremely well because it's been driving me mad for weeks.
I mean, someone tweeted us saying it might be to do with our mobile phones. In response to that, I've hidden my mobile phone on a different floor of this building.
Wow.
Just in case, Andrew.
Well, that's commitment to helping me find a solution. I really appreciate that. My mobile phone is right beside me.
Oh, and, thanks a lot. Why am I bothering?
Hey, well, look, it's a process of elimination. Maybe it could be my phone and not your phone. We'll find out soon enough. But I'm going through it and I'm trying. So fingers crossed, we get to the heart of the matter.
Okay,
right.
Cool.
So,
well, let's see. You know, that's an exciting element for the podcast.
It is.
What else to talk about? Football, maybe?
Football, maybe? Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed the football yesterday, I have to say.
It was a lovely day in North London. I know it's very banal to talk about the weather, but oh, it was gorgeous.
Oh, it wasn't in Ireland, I have to say.
Really?
It was not. No, it was fucking miserable. And it's miserable again today. Grey and overcast and oppressive, I think you would say. One of those days where the clouds... If you were the sort of person that was predisposed to a bit of gloominess in general, yesterday would have had you like, would have broken your heart.
Someone had told you this about Ireland before you moved back there.
I know.
If only someone had warned you about the weather.
Yeah, you know, this sunshine and stuff that you like so much living in Barcelona.
Yeah.
We don't have that here anymore. It's not like 5 years away. And I just thought, no, well, if the weather's good here, it must be good everywhere. God damn it.
Fell for it.
Yeah, but before we get on talking about the football,
oh, go on then.
Let's come on. We got to talk about the YouTube video. We've got to talk about it.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, what to say? So some people might be aware. after every game, I post a little YouTube video where I talk into a camera as if it's my friend, giving my thoughts about the match.
Yeah, and they're very entertaining videos, and people should watch them, I think.
Yes, thank you very much.
That's all right.
Plug.
That's okay.
But what happens is when you then upload it to YouTube, and I tend to do that in a hurry to try and get it away as soon as possible after the final whistle, YouTube will choose, randomly select a frame within the video to be the kind of default picture for it, right? So when you click on it, that's what you see. And yesterday, the YouTube gods were not kind to me, were they?
No, they really weren't.
I mean, would you like to describe it? I don't think it's fair for me to do it myself, really.
You look like a man who had been out all night long trying every single possible narcotic that exists in the world. Mm. And then, having done that, you decided that none of those were sufficient. So you started to make cocktails of these narcotics, you know, combos, speedballs, whatever the hell you want to call them. You were sort of doing them all in the big, like, you've got a great big bowl, a punch bowl of drugs. Mm. And you were, like, snorting some of it and eating some of it, smoking some of
it. Just Rice Krispies.
Rah, yeah, those Rice Krispies, the whole lot. And the moment that YouTube selected, the frame that they selected from the video, was you sort of having a dawning realization as you were whacked off your tits that none of these drugs were sufficient for what you actually wanted. I think that's probably the best way I could describe it.
And the funny thing is, that is exactly what happened over the course of Friday night and Saturday afternoon. It is worth checking out. Thank you for your mocked-up Trainspotting poster.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, that's on my timeline if you want to see it. And another great thing about that video, if you go to 3 minutes 30 into it, some small children are passing behind me and they realise there's a camera. And at first, they sort of seem quite friendly and like, oh, look. Maybe even they're thinking, oh, that's James from Gunnerblog. And then within seconds, their smiles turn to taunts and fingers of aggression. And basically, they're just swearing at me behind my back and I've got no idea, partly because I'm facing the other way and partly because I'm obviously off my mind on hallucinogenic drugs.
It was brilliant. I loved the grin on the guy, the second kid.
Yeah.
He goes off, he does it once and then turns back and like there's this smile. You get the middle finger again. It's fucking excellent.
I know. I really admire them, I have to say.
Well, you know, this is how you become famous these days, these little moments. You know, they could go viral or become a meme.
I mean, when that child grows up, imagine what he's going to do to Sky Sports reporters on transfer deadline day.
Yeah, not for him, a purple dildo in the ear. He's going to get like a, I don't know, some kind of love cannon straight up the reporters.
Yeah, he'll be lucky if it's his ear. Yeah, I tell you.
but very entertaining. So do check that out. That's you can see it all the action on your YouTube channel.
On the YouTube channel,
on the
with
YouTube
all
channel.
The parody videos and me talking to a camera.
Yes.
And yes, but it was, you know, in a way, these kind of goofy moments were sort of typical of yesterday, because maybe it's just me, but I was very relaxed during the game. It was a stroll, a lovely stroll.
It was, and I liked that we scored early, obviously, which isn't something we've done a lot this season.
When the game started, I was going to tweet saying, like within about 2 minutes, I was going to tweet saying, Arsenal are going to thrash Watford here. But I thought, I'll just have too many people telling me that I've jinxed it if it goes wrong. But do you know what I mean, though? There was that feeling about it. As soon as we set off, there was a purpose, I guess, about our play. And they looked, I mean, I suppose they've secured Premier League survival effectively. They've got their day out at Wembley coming up, maybe another day out if they win that one. And I feel like in terms of the league, I think they'd lost their last three going into the game. So the foot's really off the gas for them. So it kind
of which helps. Is a bit strange though, because you know, when you do say that they've got their day out at Wembley, it's an FA Cup semi-final, and you would think that these players would want to show the manager that they're really up for it and that they deserve their place in a semi-final team and possibly an FA Cup final. And what I found really quite interesting was the fact that Dr. House took off one of their players, you know, what, after about 35 minutes, 40 minutes, Capoue, whose name pretty much summed up
it
his performance.
Capoue, really.
Yeah, he really was Capoue. But, you know, that speaks to a decisiveness, a ruthlessness in the manager, that he wasn't going to tolerate this kind of performance from certain players, because he made another change at halftime as well. So it's the way that they played or the way that they approached the game was sort of at odds with with the way that they really should have, regardless of whether or not they've got Premier League survival.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that front. I mean, I guess for much of the season, some of those players have been very, very consistent in terms of being in that team. So he's picked, you know, the front two, barely changed all season. The centre-half's very established, the full-backs too. So maybe there's a bit of complacency there, but that's not going to stand them good. I mean, the other question is form. You don't want to go into an FA Cup semi-final in dire form and have to suddenly produce a result. So, but look, I wasn't complaining yesterday.
No, not at all. And actually, yesterday in my blog, which was written while slightly hungover, I did say that I felt like Alexis was going to do something in this game, and a goal and an assist, and the move to the right hand side seems to have worked well for him.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that he's necessarily better on the right than the left. It's almost just like. Like us changing to a Sunday, Andrew. It's the change of scene, isn't it?
And he's enjoying a very nice three-way with Welbeck and Iwobi.
Exactly, yeah. They're having a lovely time. spicing it right up. No, and that's absolutely it. And I think that's going to be the kind of... the way people look at this result is, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. One is, well, the pressure was off, you know, to an extent. We're kind of deemed out of the race by many people, including... seemingly Mesut Ozil.
I'll just correct you on that a little bit.
Go on.
Because I thought Arsene Wenger's comments were really strange about what Mesut Ozil said, right? Mm. Because what Ozil said was, yeah, we screwed it up ourselves, which I don't think you can really argue with that.
Certainly not, no.
But he also said, we have to keep fighting. That it's not impossible to win the league. So I think it was quite odd that Arsene Wenger responded to only that one part of what Ozil said. You know, Ozil wasn't giving up. I think he's given a couple of interviews where he said, look, it's going to be really difficult, but we keep going. So I don't think he's given up on the title at all, but I think he was just being realistic about what we've done or haven't done over the last two months.
That's probably fair. I'm sorry, Mesut. What can I say? I know you're listening, so I can only apologise to you.
I, like Arsene Wenger,
have overreacted.
Yeah.
But I suppose that the point still stands that to an extent it felt to me a little like the pressure was off. It had a kind of end-of-season feel about the game. Maybe it was just because the weather was nice. I don't know. But was the performance down to that, or is it down to the fact that we've now got a team... You know, we're talking about it there with the front three combining really well, a team that feels balanced and works.
Well, I mean, this is it. I know we'll come to the questions part later, but Tim Stillman actually asked a question. He wanted to know, how much do you put yesterday down to pressure being off and how much to finally having a balanced team? And I think that it's easy to say that, oh, the pressure's off Arsenal and now they perform. Mm. I think that's easy to say, and I understand that point of view to a certain extent. However... Mm. I think it's got much more to do with having a team that actually works and functions. A midfield duo that work very well together and provide us with a platform to attack properly, and a front three that's mobile, dynamic, fresh, you know, brave in certain areas. Those three work well together. Coquelin and Elneny work really well together. And then you've got Mesut Ozil in the middle pulling the strings. I think it's got much more to do with that. And I don't believe for a second that there isn't any pressure on this team just at this moment in time. Because, you know, going into the Everton game, there was big, big pressure on us because the results had been so poor. We hadn't won. We'd been knocked out of the Champions League. You know, there was big pressure going to Everton away, and we played really, really well that day. And I don't think you could say that was a game where there was no pressure. So
huge pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And even yesterday, even if Watford were shite, much of that is down to us playing well. Mm. You know, I think there's... I understand people's frustration with the season, and I understand people who go, oh, well, you know, now that the title's out of reach, we start playing well. I mean, I do understand the point of view. I just don't necessarily agree with it.
In this case, I think.
In this case, I think, you know, more than anything, we played really well. We made life very difficult for Watford. When they did get the ball, we got it back off them all the time. Like, throughout the whole 90 minutes, they had very, very little possession. They're very little danger. When they did take the ball, or when we put them under pressure, you know, they couldn't get it clear. And that was down to us doing all the right things and doing the things that we should do as a team, doing them well.
I think so.
Go on.
Also, I was going to say that Watford's sort of limited ambition meant that they were very deep and very narrow. And I think had we been playing as we were a month ago, we actually would have found them very difficult to break down because defensively they are pretty good. But we moved the ball very quickly in the final third, and that's something we just weren't doing a little while ago. And the movement of the likes of Welbeck and Iwobi has given us so much more variety that we were able to break them down in those situations. I mean, and you see that in the second goal, for example, a really excellent goal that Iwobi scored. And I think the pressure was a little bit less yesterday, but I think that fundamentally, you're right, we were a better side. We are a better side. We've found some balance, which we desperately lack between November and you know, mid-March.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's saying that what happened in the last 3 months was good or, you know, that's something that we shouldn't be critical of or negative about. But I think when you do play well, I find it a little bit frustrating that there's always this desire to find the negative in the positive. There was a halftime conversation. I think it could have been between... Were you talking to Yankee Gunner yesterday? Something about Iwobi anyway.
Maybe.
I can't remember exactly, but I remember looking at it at halftime. I remember I was about to reply to it and I said, no, I'm not going to get involved in this kind of shitstorm. But basically it was about, hey, you know, could have been Iwobi or could have been Elneny. I think it was like Elneny.
It was Elneny.
It was about Elneny. And it was like, look, he's great, isn't he? Look at what he's doing. Look at how positive he is. Look at what he's bringing to the team. And then one guy comes in and goes, yeah, but that's why Ramsey is so terrible. And you're going, guy, just like enjoy, why not enjoy the good thing instead of always having to find the negative angle in something? And I know that's human nature to a certain extent, but it does get frustrating. You know, when you are trying to discuss something that is a positive, even somebody like Iwobi, you know, it's all about, oh, well, look, he's doing remarkably well. It's fantastic. But, well, he wouldn't be in the team if Walcott wasn't so shite. You know, I'm not any great defender of Theo Walcott, as you know, but can we not just enjoy things on their own merits for once? Just like Iwobi, it's great. This is fantastic. We don't have to make it a thing... that he doesn't have to be great because something else is terrible. You know that way? He's just great because he's great. How about that?
It doesn't all have to be comparative or relative. I agree with you. I think sometimes, I mean, where's the joy in it if you can't just enjoy something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And yesterday was a day that we could enjoy and there were great goals and a positive performance. I thought, and yeah, I suppose saying, well, where was this a month ago is the kind of... the negative slant, the half-full approach. But I do understand those frustrations.
Oh, yeah.
And it took us a long time to find what we found. But, you know, take the case of Danny Welbeck, for example. He wasn't even available for a lot of that period. So it couldn't be done.
Yeah, look, I think if there's a criticism, you could say that perhaps it took too long to make the changes. But at the same time, there was an element of bravery to the change. Maybe it was desperation from Arsene Wenger, but I think when you throw in a 19-year-old like Iwobi in at the camp now against Barcelona, I think that's a brave decision.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe Welbeck wasn't fit, maybe Iwobi wasn't ready, maybe Elneny wasn't acclimatised. There are probably reasons that we might not know about that this team wasn't picked in January.
Yeah.
You know? So I think we have to be understanding of that to an extent. It is frustrating, but at least it's fixed now, eh?
Well, yeah. Well, it looks like
it appears to be.
Yeah, exactly. We found something that works, and I think we should be perhaps more focused on that than the things that didn't, because we can't do very much about what happened in the past, whereas going forward, we can look at this as, okay, well, look at what happens when you bring in hungry, fresh players, some players who give us something different. You know, when your midfield actually works... Wow, what a difference it makes when you've got somebody who can move the ball around. Elneny yesterday, 122 out of 127 passes, which is a Premier League high this season, I believe.
It's a whole lot of passes.
It's a whole lot of passes, and it's kind of what Arteta used to do for us. He was that kind of fulcrum at the midfield, the guy who just kept the ball moving, who was always available for a pass. Cazorla has done it to a certain extent when he's in there alongside Coquelin. And I really like the look of him and what he's done since he came into the team. I mean, he's a fixture now that he's got to play in every game because he's brought something that this midfield really lacked.
The thing that I was saying to or talking to Yankee Gunner about, I think he might have pointed out first at half time yesterday, was how often it struck me that someone in the back four would have the ball under some pressure, be looking for an out ball, and Elneny would just drop back in and give them an option.
Yeah.
And it's so simple, and it just meant that the fullbacks, time after time, could go infield to him and we could kind of start again. And it's unbelievably simple, but it was so useful to us time after time.
Yeah.
And you're right, he is a bit like Cazorla and Arteta. He's a very different player, but he has that same capacity and willingness to come deep and instigate things and keep things moving. He's a great continuity player. His touch and his passing are good, very consistent. And he's just provided the team with structure that it really lacked. I've been really impressed, actually. And it's he plays without ego. He plays without ego. He serves the team. And Arsene Wenger loves a player like that.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to love about a guy who's got an engine that can get him all over the pitch, who's always available? And it was interesting that the players know he's available. Did you see a number of those passes, particularly from Ozil? You could see that he knew where Elneny was going to be, that if he needed to go backwards with a pass, you know, when we were sort of probing around their final third, if he needed to go back, he just went back. He knew that Elneny was there to give him that option. So I think it's fantastic, very promising. And the partnership with Coquelin seems to work quite well. Alex Iwobi as well. What can we say? Two Premier League starts, two goals. It's good.
Long may that continue. Yeah, brilliant. I mean, he nearly got another one, didn't he? Struck the bar yesterday with a brilliant shot with his left foot.
Yeah, cracking.
I think his goal scoring record at youth level was pretty decent, and he's carried that into the first team. But to do that, to play with the swagger that he does at 19, is really remarkable. He's great. I don't know what to say. I mean, there's so much maturity about him, so much confidence. He just seems to be blossoming brilliantly. It's like, you know, certain players, they make the step up to the first team and they might feel a bit inhibited, but him, it just seems to have lifted him. And he's taking off. And I think it's really interesting. It's sort of a case, we talk a lot about young players and whether or not they should go out on loan, but Iwobi was one who, Arsene Wenger was very deliberate. He wanted to keep him training with the first team squad. And I think we're kind of seeing the benefit of that out on the field, because his combination play with the other attackers is outstanding, and you do wonder how much of that comes from being at London Colney every day and working with them up until this point in the season.
Yeah, and I think sometimes with young players as well, there is this real, perhaps an overriding desire to make an impact by doing something special themselves at the expense of what's best for the team. And what you can see in Iwobi is the real team ethic. Like, he's looking to make things happen for the team. And if he's involved in that, then great. But he will look for the better option rather than try and go alone or try and do something outrageous or what have you. Even that shot that hit the bar, he got the ball in the box and he was looking, and the Watford players backed off. So he went, okay, have a shot here. And was really, really unlucky. But, you know, he provided the cross for the Alexis goal. You know, for a young guy to come in and play with that maturity and intelligence, it says an awful lot about his talent, about his potential. And I guess people will be worried, perhaps, that, you know, we're going a bit overboard, or the reaction to him is a bit overboard, given how little he's played in general. You know, he's only played, what, three or four games recently, some FA Cup games. He's only starting to make his name in the team, but I don't know. Sometimes you just see a player and you get a feeling about them, right? That you know that there's something there.
Yeah.
And I feel a bit like that with Iwobi, to be honest.
I do as well. And I mean, I'm going to make a very, very bold comparison.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Someone
dangerous
make the T-shirt.
Game.
Someone make
dangerous
the T-shirt.
Dangerous game. But the way he took that goal coming in from the left yesterday and swept it home with his right foot had a Piresian flavour to it, I felt.
Ooh, you went there.
I went there.
Yeah.
But it did, you know, and the way that he plays on that left flank and combines with a fullback and combines with a striker in Danny Welbeck, who likes to pull left himself, it does have a hint of that Robert Pires style.
Mm.
Again, maybe some time spent with him on the training ground might have.
Yeah, exactly. You never know. So, 2-0 then at halftime, and 3-0 a couple of minutes into the second half. Hector Bellerin scored.
He enjoyed that. His left foot served him well a couple of times.
Yeah. Got a bit lucky, but hey, you got to be in the position to make that luck happen.
Absolutely.
And then the game kind of went flat, didn't it? It was like, well, it's over now. They knew it was over.
It was dead. I mean, part of me was going, looking at Tottenham's goal difference and thinking, can we keep scoring, please? Do we need to chase them down? We did ourselves some favours in that respect in the end regardless, but we did get a fourth goal. I have to say, this is awful, but when Joel Campbell was warming up, I couldn't remember who he was.
What?
I was like, who's that? And then I remembered Joel Campbell. Alex Iwobi's been so good that I've already forgotten Joel Campbell.
Like you had no idea who it was?
Genuinely, I was looking at him for about 30 seconds being like, who's that guy? I was like, is it a young player? I was like, who is that? And then when Joel Campbell came on, I was like, oh, him, yeah. He was really good.
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because Campbell has probably been one of the brighter spots of this season in terms of players who have come in and done more than people expected them to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he finds himself sidelined by Iwobi, which is a little bit unfortunate, but, you know, that's football for you, I guess.
I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, I feel like he has overachieved, and to be fair, expectations were not high, I would say, for Campbell from most people. But he's really overachieved. He's been one of our better players in some games, particularly in that quite tricky spell in the winter.
Mm.
But I still feel that he's not Arsene Wenger's man, really. That, you know, fundamentally,
he's not better than Zidane. Is that what you're saying?
Maybe not. And I think that there are other players who he has more faith in the potential of. And I'm talking about people like Oxlade-Chamberlain and now seemingly Iwobi, that as good as Campbell has been, I feel like Wenger believes that the investment of playing time might be better served in certain other individuals.
Yeah. But look, he still came on and created a goal for Theo Walcott. So
he did, yeah. And you must have been pleased to see Theo Walcott taken that away. I'm sure you're out of your seat for that one.
Absolutely. I love Arsenal goals. What can I tell you? I love Arsenal goals. I don't care who scores them.
No, I know.
But, you know, I think, it was very much an icing on the cake goal, but still a welcome goal because, like you say, goal difference could be a factor in something between now and the end of the season. So, you know, a 4-0 win, that's two clean sheets in a row, six goals. It just feels perhaps like things are clicking and... maybe it'll be too little too late. It probably will be too little too late, but I can still enjoy it as and when it happens. So
yeah, and clean sheet, very welcome. And a good save from David Ospina towards the end of the game, having had very little to do. You know, it's always what they say, got to keep your concentration in those.
I liked it. It made me laugh, that save. I don't know why. Because he was like trying to make himself as big as possible. He was at absolute full stretch and it was a great save. I'm not taking anything away from the save. I just, you know, it's just that he looks funny to me.
We should get him really long studs on his boots, you know, so they're like platform shoes.
Platform shoes, yeah. And get him one of those zany foam hand glove things. One of those with a number one. He could just say things with his index finger the whole time. Doink, doink, doink.
And then, obviously, Spurs went to Liverpool in the evening.
I didn't watch it, no.
Did you not?
No, I was out having some beers and keeping an eye on it on Twitter.
So. I was on the come down still, so did watch it.
Mashed off your face.
Yeah, and it was, you know, 1-1. I mean, I guess that's good. I guess that's points drop. I can't remember what we predicted, to be honest with you.
Oh, I can. Hang on. Because I have it pinned up on the wall here because somebody said you should keep an eye on this and see how correct you are.
Okay.
So I said they were going to lose and you said they were going to draw.
Yeah, I mean, I know my stuff, guys.
Yeah, so you're ahead on this one. Hang on, I got to get it off the wall here because I've got it pinned up on my notice board.
Okay, don't lose it.
So we both said about Arsenal that we would win yesterday.
And obviously, at the time of recording, Leicester are yet to play Southampton. What did we... I think you said they'd drop points in that one.
I said they would draw, and you said they would win.
Okay.
So let's see what happens there. But yeah, I went for a Spurs loss yesterday, and it was a draw, and you said a draw. So we'll wait and see. I'm going to just pin this back on the wall. So
at least they didn't win, guys. That's all I can say.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, they probably should have won Liverpool. That was a terrible piece of defending from Lovren, wasn't it?
Really bad. Mm. Good turn, good finish, but not good defending at all.
No.
And, yeah, I mean, Liverpool had other chances. Daniel Sturridge should have scored.
Oh, yeah, he should. I watched that last night when I came back in on Match of the Day, and I was quite furious at Daniel Sturridge for
rightly
that header.
So.
I was almost standing up off the sofa going, you...
Oh, the header.
He had
a one-on-one as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the first half, that was, I would argue, probably worse. But the header was particularly bad. And also, I was watching it on Sky, would it have been? Yeah. And the commentators didn't make much of the header. They were like, oh, unlucky, Sturridge. And I was like, no, not... score.
That's
shit! He has to score.
That's
what
I was
shouting.
Yes, grr! How dare you miss that? That was good. I suppose we can take some positives in Tottenham dropping a couple of points. Which is good for us.
Always,
and we'll
always
wait and
nice.
See. Always nice. Anything else stick out from yesterday or yesterday's football in general, or shall we move on to the questions?
Cristiano in his pants. have you seen Cristiano in his pants?
Did you see? Yeah, I retweeted one and. Hang on, I have to get it. There's a picture of them in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And they're all standing there. A couple of them are topless. Some of them are topless.
Real Madrid, this is, if you
Real Madrid, one. Yeah, having just beaten Barcelona 2-1 with 10 men. And they're in the dressing room getting a picture taken because, you know, that's what football teams do these days. Get over it. You know, but anyway, a guy on Twitter who is at dbaser92 says, why is Ronaldo wearing George Michael Bluth's bodysuit? So if you've watched, Arrested Development, you know that George Michael, in an attempt to woo his cousin, maybe, gets this kind of fake, foamy, like muscle suit. So when he puts it on, it looks like he's got lots of muscles. And Cristiano Ronaldo, in the left-hand side of the picture, is standing there in his underpants with his groin thrusting towards the head of Marcelo, who's completely unaware of this, who's doing like a kung fu celebration. And he's standing there, and it genuinely looks like somebody has drawn on the bodysuit of George Michael Bluth. It's fucking brilliant.
I mean, credit to him. It's quite the sight. He's got a number 7 on his pants, you'll notice. I enjoyed that.
Oh, does he?
On
oh, he does as well. Right on the... Right on the helmet as well.
I imagine, I was wondering, like, when, if they were all getting ready to take the photo and he stood at the side, desperately undressing, trying to get them to wait, you know, wait, just taking all his clothes off.
I've got to get my 7 out.
Yeah, and actually someone just tweeted me, it was George Gange on Twitter, just said, my mate's sister worked room service in a Manchester hotel in 2007. Cristiano Ronaldo answers the door wearing only pants and sunglasses.
Sunglasses in the
pants
hotel room.
Pants and sunglasses inside in a hotel room.
Not bad.
I take my hat off to him and all my other clothes.
Yes, it's a fantastic picture. You can find it on my timeline or go to at dbaser92 and you can see it there. It's really quite something. I think his face is what makes it as well. He's got this weird look, this sort of gormless... I am so muscly and happy face, but, you know, or like, someone's taken my picture. This is amazing.
He's very delighted.
It's
about
one of the great sports photographs, I think.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So go
there's
have
also
a look.
Apparently in the back of the picture, someone hiding, like on the floor, like trying to crawl to get out of shot, but I can't spot them.
I'm having a look here. I can't see it myself.
But someone tweeted me to say, but I've not seen it yet.
Yeah,
it's like a Where's Wally, guys.
It's just fantastic. So check that out. Okay, well, look, we'll leave that there for part one, will we? And come back with part two and questions right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions you send to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog, and sometimes by email and sometimes on Facebook, but I forgot to put up a post on Facebook this morning, so sorry about that.
Mainly Twitter today, then.
Mainly Twitter. That's exactly it. Yes, so we have questions, and I'm going to go first.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Sorry for, you know, just usurping you there. But
presumptuous of you, but I'm happy with it. I enjoyed it. Okay. Take the initiative.
All right, Stephen Dowling, at Stephen Dowling 95, says, thoughts on potential doping in the Premier League. Some doctor has said he's worked with some Premier League stars. I don't know if you've seen the story, but basically a doctor was videoed by the Sunday Times, surreptitiously videoed by the Sunday Times, and he claims to have given over 150 sports stars banned substances such as EPO, steroids, and human growth hormone, and the sports performance improvements were phenomenal. And the article says, this is Dr. Mark Bonner, and he says, Bonner claims he has treated Arsenal, Chelsea, Leicester City, and Birmingham players. Despite Bonner's claims, the Sunday Times has no independent evidence that Bonner treated the players, and no evidence that the clubs were aware of any drug use. And Arsenal have responded within the article itself by saying, our players are well aware of what is expected. We strictly adhere to all guidelines set by the World Anti-Doping Agency, and our first team players participate in approximately 50 random drug tests during each football season. None of our players has ever failed such a test. So that's that. But clearly, there's something going on.
Well, there were lots of jokes going around yesterday, weren't there, about if Arsenal are taking performance-enhancing drugs, they've not been working particularly well this season.
Yes.
Certainly not keeping people fit either.
No, that's very true. Unlike certain teams who get hamstring injuries and then play in the next game, naming no names or anything. I'm just throwing it out there as a fairly remarkable thing to happen.
I mean, I know for a fact that some of the clubs implicated, well, presumably all the clubs implicated in this, knew about this story a little time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And found it, didn't actually think it would get to publication because they didn't think there was substantial enough evidence. It obviously has. Now, I'm in the dark here. I don't know anything about if there's doping going on. My suspicion would be that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because in elite level sport, invariably, if you look at what's happened in athletics and in the Olympics, you just, you know, unfortunately, these things do come out. And the stakes are so high that I suspect people will be somewhat liberal with the regulations in order to get the advantage.
I do wonder if it's more an individual issue in football than it is a collective one, you know, because the idea, look, a club that systematically dopes its own players, well, we've sort of been there before, haven't we?
Mm.
With Juventus.
Exactly.
now. It's whether or not clubs are using modern medical techniques that aren't yet banned substances, perhaps. Maybe that's a thing that happens. Very we know possibly. That certain clubs do have techniques like blood spinning, mm-hmm. Which enables faster recovery from injury. But, you know, from an Arsenal point of view, I think Arsene Wenger is on the record so many times about doping in football that it would be quite astounding if there was anything going on from an Arsenal point of view. And I think, you know, the pressure on individual players to perform and to play, because they're all playing with some measure of pain or some measure of injury. We know that. You know, no player is 100% all the time. You just have to listen to, you know, footballers when they talk after the game. Yeah, pretty much every game I played with some kind of pain or some kind of ache or strain. You just sort of battle through it, or you take some medicine to help you get over it. It's where the line is between, okay, is that medicine allowed or not? And I guess that there are going to be some people who push the boundaries too far. I mean, the Dinamo Zagreb player this season. He failed a doping test after we played them.
Exactly. And I think it will probably be, you know, a lot of players have doctors or physios or medics who they work with to an extent independently, you know, with the knowledge of clubs. But, you know, sometimes they have their own people who they like to work with. And, and it will, I imagine, if there is any foundation here, it will be cases like that. It will be individuals. I obviously am an Arsenal fan, but I would say, given Arsene Wenger's comments and how public he's been and how open he's been about calling for investigations into this exact area, I would be staggered if there's anything going on at the club with his knowledge.
Mm, of course. Of course. And what was very interesting was the last time he spoke about doping and about how UEFA basically condoned doping, because after the Dinamo Zagreb player was found to have failed that dope test, the result was allowed to stand. I think the rules state that you've got to have two players fail a dope test for any challenge to the result, which of course is ludicrous because, you know, what's the odds? But after he did that, the next week a delegation arrived from UEFA to dope test all the Arsenal players. And to my mind, that was very obvious. It was a pointed message that, okay, you start speaking about this, then we're gonna come down and we're gonna test all your players.
We'll hold you by that standard.
Yeah. Also, it's a message to all the other managers out there that I thought that perhaps the most interesting thing about what Arsene Wenger said about doping, it was in the L'Equipe interview and there was some follow up on it. The most interesting thing to me was that no other manager came out and said anything similar. Mm. There was nobody else who went on the record to talk about doping in football. And I think it's inconceivable that there aren't issues within the game. Like with individuals, with perhaps they've got private doctors. You know, I still think that there are probably certain clubs who will use techniques that skirt the line between what's allowed and what's not. And ultimately, the thing that when you look at other sports, when you look at how people who have been caught or who have used performance-enhancing drugs, they're using stuff that isn't yet on the banned list because science and technology allows them to do that. Mm. And I wonder if that's where we are in football to a certain extent, that there are things being used that aren't yet on the banned list, but should be. So it'll be very interesting to see if this sparks any kind of decent conversation about it, because I think football's got its head in the sand a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, we will see. Who knows how reliable this particular source is, this particular story is.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's in the vested interest of the people within sport to dismiss this guy as some kind of crank.
Of course.
And he might well be. I don't know. He might well be a crank. He could just be talking out of his hole. But I think you'd be wise to try and garner as much evidence as possible before you dismiss him as just some guy talking out of his
well,
ass.
Let's hope that everyone responds in an open manner. But basically, you know, what you say about UEFA immediately sending a delegation to test us, yes, they're sending a message there, but also, as a club, we should welcome that. You know, if we've got nothing to hide, come and test us every week, you know. I know it's an inconvenience. I know it's a pain that when the players have to wait around after a game to, you know, try and give a urine sample when they're incredibly dehydrated. And it legitimately, sometimes the team coach is waiting for that to happen.
Mm.
But there needs to be an attitude of welcoming testing, and even welcoming, accepting a story like this and trying to be as receptive to it as possible in order to prove that the sport's clean.
I think as well, urine testing is limited. Blood testing is where you want to be. And I know, you know, like you say, it's difficult after the game for, you know, to get one or two players in, but that's all it would be. Maybe there needs to be a more vigorous approach to testing of players throughout the Premier League, throughout European football, perhaps throughout world football. But it's, you know, it's I guess as well there are probably issues then with, okay, well, if we've got to subject ourselves to blood tests and everything else, I do wonder if there'd be legalities there. But
maybe. I mean, what you can guarantee is that Arsene Wenger will be asked about this in his next press conference, because any big issue like this, you know, he's always good for a quote on it.
Mm.
And I guess let's keep an eye on it. It'd be interesting to see how strongly other Premier League managers come out on this subject. I think your observation's an interesting one, that very few people did last time.
Mm.
It'd be interesting to see what happens this time around.
All right. Okay, well, look, that's doping in football. Obviously, you, James, as an expert in
the Well, it's a good job there wasn't drugs. Any blood tests for me, let's just say.
Yeah. We have the YouTube evidence, so it's
should we have another question?
Why not?
All right. This is from Ben Law at Law Zone, and he says, why do we seem to revert to a more solid midfield base in times of crisis rather than from the start of a season? Is that fair?
I don't know. Why do we revert? I guess sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures. I don't know if that's true, is it? Coquelin and Elneny we spoke about, and it seems to be a combination that works well, and it's one that is where the dynamics of the two players seem to work really well together, that Elneny keeps the ball moving, Coquelin is there to do the intercepting. I mean, I think some of Coquelin's play on the ball is a bit underrated as well. It was a great pass for Alexis to set up the second goal. I suppose when things are going poorly, there's a natural inclination to safety first.
Do you think we'll stick with that now? Like, as in, you know, in the next few weeks, we could have Santi Cazorla, we could have Aaron Ramsey, we could have Jack Wilshere all become available. Do you think that will cause a change of plan for Arsene Wenger? Or do you think that he will, I don't want to say have learned his lesson, but do you think that he'll see the benefit of what he's got right now?
I hope so, because yeah, it's difficult to see how any of those players come back into the team straight away.
Mm.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing going on right now. And maybe he has stumbled across this formula, but you'd be mad, wouldn't you, to change it just to accommodate a different player? You know, if Ramsey comes back into the team, for example, you could see him perhaps play further forward. Where Mesut Ozil plays, perhaps, if Ozil needs a break or is injured or something like that. Mm-hmm. That seems to me now to be a more natural place for Ramsey to play, or to play on the right-hand side if and when he's needed there. But my feeling on it would be that these guys are doing a great job. They're playing well. The team is winning. The team's actually playing with some fluency and panache, a bit of flair again. There were some great moments in the second half, wasn't there, where we passed the ball around, some olays, which always make me like go, oh God, no, don't do that. Please don't do that.
Near the Mexican wave next.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's working. So why change it? That would be my thinking on it. And if they get back in the team, they've got to play their way back into the team. And we know that, you know, things change and players get injured or suspended or you know, doors open for players to work their way back into the team. But I don't think simply because they're Aaron Ramsey or Santi Cazorla or Jack Wilshere that they should get into the team because of their name or reputation.
Mm.
So I think stick with what we've got at the moment. And if and when we need to change things, we can change it. And it's nice to have those options. But right now, like, don't change that. That's my thinking.
I'm inclined to agree. And I think that what's nice about the way it works at the moment is that I feel like there's quite a clear delineation of responsibility. It feels like the two deeper midfielders know that while they are good on the ball, principally their job is a screening one. Principally it's one to, you know, give the team that solidity and that structure, whereas the front four have a lot more freedom. And it's not like if you're playing, I don't know, Aaron Ramsey in those two deeper roles and he wants to get up and join in and play off the striker as well. It just seems that everyone knows and understands their jobs much better this way around.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I think of the three injured players I mentioned, I guess Cazorla's the most likely to get back in because he's one who sort of has a more of a fixed role, you know, in that deep midfield role. He seems to understand that position quite well.
Yeah, but who do you take out for Cazorla?
Well, I probably wouldn't, is the truth.
Yeah.
He would be at the front of the queue for me, but I don't think I would change it right now.
Yeah.
Because the player you'd really be talking about taking out there is Elneny, and I think that would be unjust and unwarranted on recent performances. Mm,
absolutely, absolutely. Okay, cool. Right, here's a question from Waleed Omer. He's at Waleed Omer 159. And he wants to know, what are your thoughts on Nyom taking out Mesut Ozil after he showed actual skill with a few delightful flicks?
Well, I'm kind of sad about it because I've always enjoyed Nyom's name.
Nyom, 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 nyom,
nyom. Sounds
like
someone eating something delicious.
Nyom, 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 nyom.
But he did not find Mesut Ozil's trickery delicious yesterday.
It left a sour taste in his mouth, didn't it?
Very much so. And then he tried to, I don't know, knock all the teeth out of Mesut Ozil's mouth. I mean, you know, Ozil was being a bit... If I was a defender playing against Ozil, I definitely would have kicked him. If I'm honest with you.
I didn't think he was that showboaty, to be honest. I mean,
there was a point on the right-hand side just before this incident, I think, where he and Alexis exchanged about 12 passes. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I was like, if I was watching that thing, if I was a Watford defender, the next time he came near me, you know, I'd let him know about it. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a foul. It should be punished. But I can slightly understand his frustrations. He's not as good as Mesut Ozil, and that's a frustrating thing for him.
Yeah. Look, I think
what about you? As someone who's played in defence.
I have been guilty of that same sort of thing. Once or twice in my career, when you play somebody who's really good, and I think you only really get frustrated if you feel like they're showing off. Or they're doing it to kind of wind you up. But I didn't really see that from Ozil yesterday because there's an efficiency to what he does when he makes those flicks, right? It creates something, it creates space. He's not doing it to humiliate an opponent. He's doing it for the benefit of his own team. Now, it's not like, do you remember the FA Cup game against Manchester United?
Mm.
When, was it Nani?
Mm.
It did about... four or five headers, and then he ran along the sideline doing keepy-ups, and Flamini came in and fucking steamed into a tackle.
Yeah.
I thought that was absolutely 100% acceptable because Nani was showboating to take the piss.
To be fair, we don't know that Flamini was doing that as a response to Nani.
No,
he
would just
do that at all times.
Yeah. but yeah, yesterday I thought, look, if you're frustrated, why not try and be better yourself? But, you know, I can't say that I haven't in my time gone through the back of a forward or a winger who has, you know, roasted me a couple of times.
Yeah. Sure.
So, yeah, I get it, but, yeah.
It's not nice. It's not nice, is it? So it wasn't very nice from Nyom.
No, not nice from Nyom.
Not nice.
Not nice.
Let's have a question. Oh, this is interesting. I thought it was quite interesting. Martin Cantor, at Marty Cantor, says, is it beneficial for Iwobi to avoid being super hyped as he chose to represent Nigeria instead of England?
That is an interesting question, yeah. I wonder if the England hype machine would have gone ballistic if he had been England. It was very interesting, wasn't it? Arsene Wenger asked yesterday if Iwobi was England's loss.
Mm.
And he said yes. Yes.
Have we talked about it on the show before, why he ended up... I mean, he was born in Nigeria, right?
Came to England at about 4 years of age and played for England youths at every level up to, I think, what, under 17 or under 18. But when it came to under 19s, he was routinely ignored by the selectors. Yeah. He didn't get any kind of a call-up at all.
A.D. Boothroyd, I think, was the coach.
He was a former Watford manager, right?
Indeed, yeah.
So he decided that, you know, he would listen to the overtures from the country of his birth and go there. I mean, I suppose in a couple of ways, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because if Nigeria qualify for African Cup of Nations, which they haven't done this time, then, you know, he's a player that we lose for a couple of months every couple of seasons. But yeah, I think there's probably a lot to be said for him not being the latest guy to get hyped up beyond all recognition. You know, you think of, who am I thinking of? It tends to happen a lot with Tottenham players, doesn't it?
Especially at the moment.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not even talking about someone like Kane, who's obviously, okay, he's probably quite good, but there are certain Tottenham players or certain Tottenham wide players down the years who've been touted as, well, he's going to be the next great thing for England.
The Aaron Lennons of this world.
Yeah, the Andros Townsends of this world, who have a couple of good games and all of a sudden, you know, they're the answer to all of England's attacking problems. And yeah, there's a tendency from the English media to do that to certain players. And I think it'll be good for Iwobi not to have to endure that, because I think it's an endurance more than anything.
I mean, it's curious that there was such a fuss made such a fuss made over Jack Grealish over this season. And the tug of war between
and there's a guy who's never gonna fucking play for England. Like, unless like he turns his shit around in a big way, he's never going to fucking play for England.
Whereas as Iwobi, you know, I mean, he's now made his competitive debut for Nigeria, so that door is, mm-hmm. is closed. But yeah, I think it is England's loss, and I think it may prove to be Arsenal's gain. And I have to say as well, I don't think we should assume that Iwobi's only playing for Nigeria because England didn't select him. I'm sure he feels an emotional connection and a bond with that country.
Of course, and his uncle is JJ Okocha.
Indeed, so he is.
So one of the legends.
Yeah. In fact, there was a shot of Iwobi yesterday where he was, I think, walking down the tunnel in his coat where he looked a bit like JJ. But who wasn't always absolutely efficient in his showboating. Sometimes you felt like he was doing it purely for the aesthetics, but it was always fun to watch. But I do think it might be a good thing. I think that he's outside of the hype machine. Imagine if Iwobi, you know, had been part of that England squad that went to Germany and won in the international break, I think the pressure would be significant.
Mm. Sticking with Iwobi, this is from KB, at KB underscore is underscore on. So good for him or her. We don't know. But he wants to know, are we getting carried away regarding Iwobi? Oxlade-Chamberlain and even Gnabry started really well too.
True. Very true. I mean,
are we getting carried away by Iwobi, our new prince and saviour, the man who will bring peace to the world and Premier League and Champions League trophies to Arsenal, as well as winning the Ballon d'Or and European Player of the Year for 5 or 6 years in a row? Are we going overboard here?
As it's clear, I'm really calm about the emergence of the new Robert Pires. I think his point about Gnabry is a good one. He was terribly exciting, wasn't he, in his first few games?
Yeah.
And he's at West Brom now still, is he just about?
No, I think he's back with us and he's training. He's not gone on loan somewhere. There was talk about him going to the Championship on loan. Maybe he might do still. Can they still do that? I think you can still loan players, can't you, in the Championship?
We might be past that now.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Right.
But I guess that's true. I mean, what I would say about Iwobi is that I think we're enjoying it for what it is. I'm not saying next season Iwobi's a starter in every game, you know? Mm-hmm. I think I'm realistic about how I think most fans are. I think most fans are still like, well, look, come the summer, if there's a player in that position who's got experience and who's ready now and is world-class level, obviously we're going to welcome that and his opportunities might be less than they are presently. But right now, with the players we have available, he's doing a really good job and I think people are just enjoying that rather than necessarily seeing him as a saviour as such.
Yeah, sure. But and the other thing as well is that there are so many intangibles when it comes to a player's career that they've got to have that bit of luck to stay injury free, to come into a team. I mean, he's been given a chance, a big opportunity, and I think we've seen it a couple of times. Bellerin, Coquelin, players who have been given a chance because A, either of injury, or because B, there's been no other option, who've actually come in and seen that opportunity and taken it really well. So, I mean, much of it is down to the player and how he plays, but there are other things, there are other factors. You know, how is the team playing when a young guy comes in and plays? So, I mean, Iwobi, what's interesting to me is that he's come into a team that's been playing badly and he's helped it play better. Whereas you could see a young player come into a team that's playing badly and say, well, how is he supposed to perform? How is he supposed to make an impact to such a young and inexperienced player? So that's kind of what makes Iwobi interesting for me. But there are other things, like, you know, if he stays injury-free. Gnabry had a terrible knee injury, and that's obviously affected his career in a very negative way. He's a guy who's got to go on loan somewhere next season and play, you know, play a season of first-team football and try and rebuild his career to the point where he could be considered for Arsenal. And that's timing, that's luck. You know, certain players just don't seem to have any. And maybe Iwobi, maybe he's one of those guys for whom, you know, the what's the phrase? The cards fall something nicely on the table. Blah,
yeah,
blah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, one of those. So, yeah. I mean, don't think anyone's getting carried away, but it's really exciting. I think, you know, it's one of those things that's quite unique to football, isn't it? That we've got this young guy, he's come through the Arsenal Academy, he joined the club at the age of 9, and here he is now, 10 years later, making a breakthrough into the first team. And as much as we like high-class signings and expensive signings and getting great players from abroad, there's something just really still nice about a young guy who's got Arsenal in his blood coming through and making the breakthrough into the first team. You know, I think that's it's one of the great joys of football, I think.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Harry Kane. I can't find the bloody quotes now, but I saw some quotes yesterday. I don't like to talk about praising Spurs players, but it was about how poorly he fared in various regards in testing his ability as a youngster. So when he was, you know, around sort of 9, 10 age, there was a lot of talk about him. And even later than that, in his sort of early teens, you know, he was technically behind some players, physically well behind, couldn't match them in terms of sprint speed or height or his jumping, things like that. But the quote was expressing that what he always had was a fantastic, fantastic attitude. And I thought the quotes of Andras Jonker about Iwobi were particularly telling. He said, Alex is incredibly motivated, dedicated, willing to work and open to listening. Mm. He's always trying to improve himself. And when you talk about those intangibles, that attitude, I think, is so integral in a player's development. And that's what gives me hope that Iwobi, you know, he could be the real deal. He could be someone who makes the grade at Arsenal because, as well as those inherent technical things, he's got the brain that you need as well.
Yeah, you can find those quotes on the timeline of Jackie Oakley, actually.
Oh, that's
from
the
BBC.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're talking about how statistically he was 30% behind every other player at the academy. And the guy said, if we judged him on just the data, we might have released him. Certainly when I was at Watford, I would have missed Harry Kane, but he talked about he always had this great strength, his desire to improve. And that's something that Arsene Wenger has said about Iwobi, as well as Jonker. Arsene Wenger has said that too, that he's very open and wants to learn from all these great players around him. And maybe that's the difference. You know, small thing, but can make a big difference. All right, have you got one more? Or
I don't know. Let's have a look. Yeah, okay. This is one.
This is the last one, right? So because
okay,
time,
right.
Time
well,
is ticking
on. It's not a silly
on.
One. It's quite a serious one. Is
that's
that
okay.
All right?
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay, fine. It's from at Cockblock on Twitter. Good name.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, given how unreliable Gabriel can be at times, despite his obvious talent, do we need a new centre-back in the summer?
I think that will be an area where we probably should be looking all right.
Arsene Wenger was talking again about how hard it is to find centre halves and centre forwards.
Right.
In the current market. So that's the most difficult positions to discover.
Yeah, actually, there was a great an article in the Mirror yesterday by Ed Malion, who's based in Spain now, but he was looking at the central defenders. because all the big teams in Spain are looking for central defenders as well. And that there are good central defenders around if you're willing to take a bit of a chance with them. Yeah, I mean, you look at what we've got at the moment, Koscielny, Mertesacker, Gabriel and Callum Chambers. And I do wonder if Callum Chambers is going to be used primarily as a central defender. But it comes down to what the manager thinks about Mertesacker, for example, who's lost his place in the side right now, and whether he thinks that, okay, he would be great backup. I think Mertesacker would be a great guy to have in your team, a very experienced player. But again, when players get to the age that Mertesacker is at, they probably want to play. So that'll be an interesting one to see what the manager does in that regard. I think if a top-class centre-half is available, then, yeah, we should do our best to get him because, you know, Koscielny's gone 30 now, and I'm not saying he's over the hill, but there's got to be a bit of forward planning here in terms of what we do. I do wonder if perhaps this summer we've got more work to do in the midfield area than we do in the defence. But, you know, we need probably, when you look at it objectively, Debussy's going to go, right? Kieran Gibbs is probably going to go, and there's a decision to be made about Mertesacker. So I think we're looking in the defensive areas, we're looking at probably having to sign a left back, somebody who can understudy Monreal, and we're probably looking at a right back too, depending on whether or not he sees Chambers as somebody who can do that job when Bellerin's not available. Carl Jenkinson obviously at the club as well. So that might be something. But yeah, I mean, I'm open to improving the squad wherever we can get it. And if that means bringing in a centre half, all fine by me.
Yeah, just finding one. That's going to be tricky.
I do worry a little bit about Gabriel. I mean, he didn't have a great deal to do yesterday, but there was one moment where the ball came to Deeney or Igalo in the box and he fell over. Doing this weird thing, you know, when they put their hands behind their back.
Yeah.
Which I think, I could be completely wrong here, I think that affects your balance. you know, when you're moving at a reasonable speed, you use your arms.
There's a reason Usain Bolt doesn't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
He's sprinting.
Yeah, exactly. And he did slip over and Bellerin saved the day a little bit there, and he has this tendency to get turned a little bit. But obviously Arsene Wenger is giving him a run in the side to see if he can iron out those little issues with his game. But yeah, look, if we can get a centre-half in, let's get one. Why not? What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird, isn't it? You know, I guess that's what happens when you don't buy an outfield player in one summer, but when the next one comes around, you end up with quite a lot of work to do. You know, you just ran through a couple of the positions there, but I could see a need for a centre-forward potentially as well. I could see certainly a central midfielder, if you think Arteta, Flamini and Rzitski will be off. Possibly a centre-half, possibly a couple of full-backs. The list becomes quite long quite quickly.
Goalkeeper perhaps as well, because you do wonder what Ospina's going to do in the summer.
He's done himself plenty of favours in that regard with this recent run in the side.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there won't be any shortage of takers, I think. So no. It depends then what we want to do to have backup for Petr Cech. So yeah, it's all shaping up to be an interesting summer.
Indeed. I'm sure we'll have more of that as we get closer to it.
No doubt. So look, what are you going to do for the rest of your Sunday? Go off and stick your nose in a trough full of drugs and get smashed again?
I'm actually going to Reading, so that may be helpful.
Right.
To endure Reading.
Okay, I've never been to Reading.
I mean, you're not missing much. I'll level with you.
It is not high on the list of places that I want to visit in my life. And that's people of Reading, I'm not being...
It's not on the bucket list.
No, it's not. It's not.
My stomach is really rumbling as well. I'm going to go and...
Is that what that
I'm
is?
I'm going to go and make... Yeah, that is. It's going mental. I'm going to go and make a bacon sandwich and see how Leicester get on against Southampton. When you're listening to this tomorrow, you'll know.
Yeah, we won't know. We don't know at this point. What did I say? I said... You said they were going to win. I said they were going to draw. So let's hope I'm right this time.
Okay.
All right.
Keep those Tottenham title hopes alive.
Yeah. Fuck off. remember, if you want to give us a rating or a review on iTunes, feel free to do that.
Oh, we were number one on iTunes. Have we talked about that?
I think we did, didn't we?
Oh, okay. I'm still on a high.
We're basking.
From that, not from the drugs.
Yeah. A natural high of being number one on iTunes ahead of Football Weekly and Football Ramble. And
let's get there again, guys. Honestly, that was my best day. Let's do it again.
The best day ever. We had such fun.
Subscribe, rate, review. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends and family and even strangers in the street. Just go up to them and say, Arsecast.
Yeah.
Arsecast.
They'll be so intrigued, they'll have to download it.
Yeah. Or they'll put their bum in some plaster of Paris. Took a moment there, didn't it?
Very nice. Very nice. Took me a little while.
All right. Listen, you enjoy your Sunday, and we'll be back with an Arsecast on Friday, another Arsecast Extra next Monday.
Lovely. All right. Bye-bye, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.